Welcome to the Colorado Review podcast, featuring prose and poetry from both recent and archived issues of the journal. Once a month, we take a look at new content from the Center for Literary Publishing and invite editors and authors to read and discuss the work coming out of the center. My name is Megan Pipe, and today co-podcast editor Lauren Matheny and I are joined by editor-in-chief Stephanie Geschwind and associate editor David Mucklow to share some highlights from the Summer 17 issue of Colorado Review. Stay tuned!
Welcome back to the Colorado Review. We're here for a July podcast, and we have a little bit of a different format today. We're having more of a roundtable discussion. So today we've got Stephanie Geschwind, and then, of course, Megan Pipe and Laura Matheny here as always.
Hello.
We have David Mucklow here representing the poetry contingent for us today. So first we're just going to talk a little bit about the most recent issue of Colorado Review that came out. And summer's an interesting time here at the magazine. We were reminded of a quote from Stephanie's intro to this issue that said, "This issue's stories and essays are situated in spaces of transience." I'm just kind of thinking about the transient nature of summer. For our magazine, the students are gone. Stephanie's office is pretty quiet. And we pop in and out to fulfill some various responsibilities, but getting...
And to say hi.
And to say hi. Yeah.
And get a little break from the heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool in my office. It's a welcoming space.
It's true.
I love my time alone, but I do get lonely and I do miss you. So I'm glad when you guys pop in.
I think especially the summer issue, because it comes out after the semester has ended, so we do all the production work leading up to the end of spring semester, but then, I mean, all of the celebration of it, like our bus going to hold it, happens when we're not here.
It arrives in a very quiet space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So here's our fanfare, I guess.
Yeah. So, Megan, want to talk about a fiction piece?
Sure. What I really loved about the fiction in this issue is that, I read each of the stories in the spring as they were coming in, as they were being produced as part of this issue of the magazine, but then the really beautiful thing about then reading them one after another in this like bound format is that you start to see connections that you wouldn't as just separate stories living on their own. So the thing that I wanted to talk about is a resonance that I started to see between the story that appears first in the issue, Emily Beck's What She Was, and the last fiction story of the issue, Voices Underwater by Samantha Story, which was talked about last month. So the way, Emily Beck's What She Was is about a chance encounter between a man who's traveling from one city to another in the Southwest. He encounters a woman on the side of the road, picks her up, and it ends with a moment of violence that he then, in the last paragraph we know, forgets about, except for this like lingering feeling that he can't quite attach to a specific memory, though we as readers know what that memory is because we've experienced it in real time with the characters. But the last sentence of the story, to I suppose give it away a little bit, ends with something without shape or color, some force. He felt it rise against him, a current, like the current of the river he swam in as a boy, the laughs and screams of girls, not yet women, echoing around him. Mm-hmm. And when I reread that after reading Voices Underwater, it just sent chills down my spine, because the story, I mean, it looks at male threat and violence from this man's perspective. And so you're seeing it from an angle that is just, it just gives you another perspective on that. And then to zoom backwards to the girls who then become those like objects of violence later on, we meet them in Voices Underwater in a very different way, where there's a very different male threat that's looming in the background. And so to then read those stories in tandem, I think that the themes are really talking to each other in some interesting and surprising ways, I think, given the perspectives that each of them take. So that is my recommendation, to read them both and then to think about like how they're kind of working together thematically.
Stephanie, do you think that's sort of a chicken or the egg situation, that we, the editors, when they're finalizing the story choices, do you think those echoes happen intentionally, or do you think we as readers formulate the echoes? As human beings, we're always just looking for those connections.
I wish I could say that the stories were chosen in that way, but I think it ends up being a kind of coincidence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't actually even make that connection until just now, and it's mostly that phrase, girls, not yet women.
Yeah.
And that's what the two girls in Voices Underwater, that's exactly where they are on that cusp of girlhood, and they're experimenting in becoming their conception of women, mm-hmm. experimenting with makeup and trying to look sexy. And so they're right on that cusp. But no, I don't think that the stories are, they're not chosen in that way. But just the selection process is, I guess I would say, much more organic mm-hmm. than that.
I feel like intuitively that kind of thing starts to happen
mm-hmm.
between readers and stuff. But mm-hmm. it's really kind of amazing what you get to think about when you get to read them back to back, like you're saying, Megan.
Mm-hmm. I think empathetic writing is always going to bring out those things in your mind. You know, these stories are just so compassionately written about real human lives in a way that you can connect to, that I think that starts creating the echoes for you in a really fascinating way.
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed that either, and now I like have goosebumps.
There you go. I guess from a writer perspective, it's fun to see, like, once it exits your world, and then the readers, like, it becomes their, like, they own the story in a way. And uh-huh. like, when readers have that kind of ownership, they get to do work in like a fun way, mm-hmm. but the work of finding connections mm-hmm. and feeling what resonates, what feels like true or important, that'll be different for like every reader.
Everybody.
But it's fun to see how that happens for everyone.
Stephanie, is there an essay?
Well, like, as always, I like all of the essays, but the thing that I think is particularly interesting about this issue's essays is that they're all experimenting with form. None of them is a traditional narrative of here's something that happened, and then this happened, and that happened. And so they're all playing with form. So we have Kathleen Blackburn's essay, Daughter Tongue, and that was the winner of the AWP Intro Journals Project for nonfiction. And she is writing about how she was born in Guam. It's about her relationship with her mother. It's about where you are from versus where where is your origin. And as I mentioned in the intro, that she's also trying to find connections between secrets and stories and myths and lies. And it's a wonderful braided essay about that experience. And then we have an essay by Jordy Dakin, and it's a very moving piece about a friend of his who fell to her death, and he is thinking about gravity, wishing gravity worked differently, and just, again, playing with form. And I think it's a way to talk about something very painful from a kind of periphery, but there's so... It's such a rich essay, and again, it has an interesting form. And then we have a piece called Transparent from Jill Talbot, and she is working with, it's kind of a modular essay, very small or very short paragraphs, and it too has some braided elements about a time in her life that was an unstable time, and written now from the perspective of being in a much better place. So I love that they're all very non-traditional forms of nonfiction, telling really powerful stories about the writers.
I think there's something interesting about podcasting about these, because as we're looking at these on the page, there's just a different kind of experience that would be had, you know, if we read, for instance, this Nadine and the Theory of Everything essay by Dakin. If we read it out loud, it'd be a completely different experience for you as a listener than it would be for you as a reader. And so, I don't know, there's some power to just looking at these essays on the page, mm-hmm. like you said, in their inherent form. It's sort of
poetry-ish. Yeah, the movement of this essay, Nadine and the Theory of Everything, I was really compelled by just that in a non-traditional form, thinking so sincerely about gravity and then also loss, it like really got to address little tones of grief by using a different form in that way.
Right.
This sort of detachment of trying to find things like physics equations to cope with the loss of a friend. And then it also moves into like the real sadness of grief and dealing with it. And it's just short span too. It's only like...
It's about, is it about six pages?
6 or 7 pages, yeah. And it's, really, really moving.
Yeah, that, the gravity and the equations, I mean, it gives the, I think it gives the writer a little bit of distance between himself and his grief and a way to process that grief and a way to, like I said, imagine how things might have been different if gravity worked in a different way.
Yeah.
Don't we all wish that?
How about some poetry, David?
Yeah.
What are you liking?
Oh, man. I feel like this is such an amazing issue. We have so many great poets. And Camille has written such a fine intro to it as well, considering the loveliness of pickles in the summertime in these poems and their loveliness and saltiness.
We were very lucky to have Camille Dungy as our guest editor for the summer issue. Thank you, Camille.
Yay!
I have two poems I want to read or talk about. And the first one is by Javier Zamora. It's called To My Little Cousin. Your name is three languages. Adriana for your mom's, Ak for your dad's. Nicole is where they met. Your mom in apartment number 2 with us. Your dad upstairs with his cousins in number 7. Far away from Yucatan. Far away from the languages you hide like a path to a cenote. When classmates laughed at your last name, Yuck, Ak, and the teacher said nothing, you didn't want to write Ak on any paper. I love iPhones, the internet, the quickness to learn. Ak is a turtle god, so vast it rules the sky. Its shell, with bright, sharp corners, protects us. Now, near Navidad, you ask stories about fireworks, Abuelita, chickens roosting in a cashew tree, so your mom searches for flights. We find one to San Salvador, but Priceline won't let us buy for a child only. You can't have layovers. No relatives can sit with you. You're a citizen, and we don't know how to tell you we're different. The way you insist on Spanish, ask your dad to teach you Maya, there's a need to taste that dirt we've eaten. Here, we must dig deep to tell you Nicole means victorious people. Victorious. We pay extra for a direct flight. Once there, remember the names your parents have chosen. Remember the turtle shell we hold up with our brown and brilliant hands. I love a lot about this poem, but there's a way in which I've been thinking about endings of poems, and especially for the listener too, that how do you know a poem's going to end, especially when you're listening to it and not seeing it come to an end on the page? And what's a poem supposed to do with an ending? And it's open in a lot of ways, whether it wants to return to things in the poem or go off in another sort of direction. And I think that this poem sort of wanders really in a lovely, controlled sort of way. The way that the speaker considers the name of the little cousin as well as then their own experience with it, the move to I love iPhones, the internet, the ability to learn, being this like amazing contemporary thing that we can do and consider in poems now, but also that lets it move, this poem move from names into this history of Ak as a turtle god and how that opens up the rest of the poem to the family. And then it returns to that. And I think that that's an interesting consideration of language, the meaning of names in a sort of holistic sense that is exciting for the poem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like this poem creates this really lovely dream world in the start of talking about summer, and you have these memories of childhood summers. I think this poem kind of crafts that for me in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers of like being a Hispanic person in America that come through in these small moments next to those also very deep considerations of language and heritage. And it does that in such seamless ways. I thought it was really exciting.
Yeah, the line about iPhones and the internet, it just, like, it calls out ignorance about really anything, because if we all, like, have in our pockets the ability to look up and learn about something unfamiliar.
It's on us for not doing it.
Yeah, there's so much about, like, the world and other people. And
yeah, and I know that Javier Zamora has a book coming out called Unaccompanied on Copper Canyon this fall, which I'm also very excited about. It should be a lot more amazing poems.
Do you know if this poem will be...
I don't, so...
That'll be exciting to see.
It will be.
Yeah, there will be, regardless, tons of amazing poems in that book as well.
It's really neat to see the authors that we sort of see as our... You know, we've put their work out into the world, and then you realize that they've got... There are connections to all these things outside of us, and we get to see them move on and build.
Yeah. Powerful. And so I have one more poem, and this is the winner of the ADUP Intro Journal Project in Poetry, selected by Leona Sevic. So I guess another young poet, Erica Mueller, The Fossil, Cherokee Nation, Oklahoma. He'll spend all day outside smashing rocks. In 100-degree heat, he found this one. Inside, it's part of his story. More than once, men broke his mother this way, and she got back up. The fine spines of the shell build over this boy each time he has to watch their fists from the door frame, his mother crying out. I will not say her tears are part of an ocean, although we know there was a sea. Her tears came after the water left and the land dried, and mothers were forced to walk long miles while their children and husbands, their own mothers and fathers, walked too. Not many would expect to find a shell inside the memory of this rocky mountain. No one should expect to find such terrible hardness inside another. Yeah. And I love the simplicity of language in this poem. Oh, I'm always sort of fascinated by the way language can so simply convey some thinking. In a way, especially, that this poem uses simple language to reach not just back in time to think about the atrocity of the Trail of Tears, but also far back in geologic time to consider the fossil itself, the inland ocean that created the Great Plains, and to use those all so wonderfully and powerfully to wrap this poem up. Again, the ending, such a powerful ending.
Sort of an expanding metaphor of the, I feel like the more you look at those lost, it's just three lines, but the more you look at it, the more resonance you find throughout the rest of it.
Yeah, and for as grand a metaphor as it is in the poem too, it's also just a fossil being held by the boy. There's so much in that that really, again, sort of reverberates in these even small tight lines. Simplistic language, it's got a lot of layers to it. Heritage as well.
Let's talk a little bit about some other journals we're excited about this summer. We have a little bit more time to read in the summer sometimes. I think I just have more freedom to read what I want to read, and so I've been looking at, I've been straying a little further afield maybe than I normally would in the school year. So what do you guys think? Read anything particularly exciting lately?
I guess I have two.
Okay.
One, I just saw that the New York Times published, They asked some contemporary poets, I think it was six of them, to write poems, and they gave those poems to photographers to use as inspiration, sort of like reverse ekphrastic project. And I just saw, I just got to look at them, and there's some amazing ones. I think Ada Limone had a great poem, including a barn, and I love when a barn shows up in the poem. And some amazing photographs of Texas. It was one of the Carolinas, and that was really amazing. And also, Grandma Press publishes poems weekly, and I've written that into a podcast before, but they recently published two of CSU's MFA candidates or alumni, so it's an exciting one to always keep looking towards.
We get a lot of magazines here at the Colorado Review office, and so I've been looking recently at the newest issue of Gulf Coast. It's volume 29, number 2, and I was excited to see that Molly Reed, who is an alum of our program and also a former Colorado Review associate editor, has a piece in here called Fall from Grace, and it's the honorable mention for the Barthelme Prize.
Molly.
Yeah, Molly. Yeah, it's a wonderful piece. And then in the poetry, I mean, there's all kinds of great stuff in this issue, and it's just beautifully produced. Mm-hmm. And I was also excited to see that Natalie Center Zapico, whose book we published a couple of years ago in the Mountain West Poetry Series, The Verging Cities, Natalie has a poem in here called There Is No Such Thing as Confession in Latinx Poetry. And I'm very happy about that. Natalie has a book coming out soon from Copper Canyon Press. So that's a wonderful thing. And I also really love this new issue of Ecotone. Again, it's a really beautifully produced magazine, thanks to Emily Louise Smith, who does a really great job at UNC Wilmington's publishing laboratory. And this is just one of the things that she does. But I see that Brenda Peinado has a story in there called The Whitest Girl. And we published a story in Colorado Review a couple years ago by Brenda called Storage. And I'd love to see, as you guys were mentioning earlier, the authors that we work with, when I see them in other magazines and see their books, it's so great to see their work outside of our office, outside of this space, and to see that they're going on to do other wonderful things. So, those two issues, the new Ecotone, the spring-summer 2017, and the Gulf Coast 29 number 2. I guess that's the summer-fall issue for them.
I've been really excited lately just about, you know, we talk a lot about the 24-hour media cycle, but I also feel like there's starting to become a 24-hour literature cycle in response to a lot of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I was, Kenyon Review has a beautiful website. It's incredibly produced. And they published a couple poems by Brian Russell. So the first one is Russian Airstrike Holmes, January 2016. And then the second is U.S. Airstrike Takhar, July 2016. So in response to, you know, these graphic images we've been seeing on the news for what feels like forever. But just I think the freedom to produce art so quickly in response to some of the things that are happening in this world is maybe an overlooked, an overlooked little act of grace that I really appreciate
being defiance able to.
Yeah,
vigilance.
Yeah, yeah. And we're at Colorado Reviews on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, and I feel I've started following a spate of literary journals, and just such a nice thing to have pop up in your timeline the midst of horrible news.
Yeah.
That's true.
The last thing we wanted to talk about today for a little bit, Megan and I were really fascinated by this idea of the beach read. It's in huge air quotes. I was thinking about beach reads after we had done an email chain about it, and I was pretty up in arms about the terminology, and I realized that I think I feel about beach reads kind of the way we've started to talk about the bikini body. So put a bikini on your body, and you have a bikini body. I think I feel like read a book on a beach, and it's a beach read.
Oh, I agree.
I like that.
Absolutely.
I think, yeah, just the... Mm-hmm. So maybe, what is your ideal beach read, everyone, for this summer? Something you've read in the past?
I think, so, I mean, number one, there are no beaches in Colorado, of course, but there are beautiful lakeside slash reservoir sites.
Horsetooth Reservoir right near us.
Yeah.
Happening place to be.
And I find, like, when the days seem so big and long and full that I want the reading that I do to feel that way, too. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I wonder why this is. I find myself reading much more dense, intense books, stories, whatever, during the summertime, and I wonder if it's because of a, like, balancing effect of the sunshine and the, like, happiness of what's going on around me. Just really makes me want to enter into a different space. I don't know if it's, like, the contrast of those two things that makes me really enjoy both what I'm reading and my surroundings, but I don't know. So I've been reading, I've been going back into, like, issues of journals that have come to my house and joined a stack on my desk, but I haven't opened yet. So I've gone back to the winter issue of American Short Fiction, which is all novellas. So it's three, like, 60 to 80 page stories that are just, like, a little meatier. Have, like, the time and the space to
And really process and appreciate. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. David?
I don't know. Similar to Megan being from Colorado, I've never really done beach reading. But I feel like if I'm going to have a beach read, it's like something that's like nice to read, but it's edgy. So it's sort of, I think terms of beach reading, I think a part of it's too like reading a book by its cover that you're seeing what other people are reading when you're on a beach.
Yeah,
I love it.
So I don't know. I don't quite know what a beach read would be, but I feel like something that has a little bit of an edge to it and it can like bring some more like excitement beyond a typical narrative sort of story. But I often am working, so I feel like poems are easy, so I can take a break and read something contained.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stephanie?
Well, I don't even know how to answer that question, really.
I mean, do you think your reading style changes based on vacationing, based on... Are you more prompted to read something you wouldn't normally pick up during the summertime?
No, I would say that I'm just always reading what I feel compelled to read at mm-hmm. whatever time. I mean, I'm kind of lucky that I'm not in school anymore. And that is something that I still really appreciate, that there's nothing assigned to me that's hanging over my head that I have to read. But I will say that right now, I'm, of course, not at a beach, but my husband and I recently watched the film version of Julian Barnes's short novel, The Sense of an Ending. And I realized, I had read it before, but I realized I had forgotten what happened. And so I'm rereading that now. And I don't know that it feels, it's, you know, I'm definitely not at the beach. Mm-hmm. Is it a summer read? No, it's just something that I'm reading and really enjoying.
I think I read a lot faster in the summer. I've gone through probably 7 or 8 books so far in the past few weeks.
Yeah.
And I've been really getting into nonfiction this summer.
What are you reading right now?
Well, I just picked up, I'm a huge fan of, there's an author who is a British historian and writes about a day in the life of an average person in Victorian times, is the last one I read. But this new one is Tudor times, and it really delves into the record, the paper trail that's left behind by ordinary people. In a way that I haven't seen done before, and it's just, maybe I am escaping. Maybe I'm escaping to Tudor England for
because that's
exciting. That's where I want to be. I think I get kind of on trains of reading types and fall down the rabbit hole a bit.
Yeah, I think I started reading some nonfiction this summer, which I haven't done in a long time, and it's fun to sort of change it up or like not feel like you're saying like you're assigned something to read. Mm-hmm. But like you can explore something that you normally wouldn't because you have lots of time, which is nice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today,
guys. Thank you for hosting this.
This is really fun, and thanks for listening to the Colorado Review Podcast. We'll see you next month.
Check out the full Summer 17 issue of Colorado Review by visiting our website at coloradoreview.colostate.edu. Also online, you can find selections from recent and archived issues of the journal, blog posts, reviews, and much more. This podcast is made possible by Colorado State University and the Center for Literary Publishing. Thanks for listening.